Hello, dear listener, it's Daniel. Now, before we get to this episode, just want to remind you, me and Core just launched a Patreon. For $7 a month, you can get exclusive content. Now, how do you sign up for said exclusive content? Well, we made it easy. There's a link down in the show notes, or go to patreon.com/litdpod. We'll see you soon. Now, let's get to today's episode. This episode of Light in the Darkness podcast was made possible by Andy Flaherty Child Parenting. Andy, we love you here at Light in the Darkness podcast and would just like to say happy birthday.
I was drunk with some friends and I was kind of like in this moment where I'm like, you know what? Even when I'm with a guy sexually, like I don't feel connected. I don't feel as satisfied emotionally as I am with when I'm with all my girlfriends. I was like, you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm a lesbian. Like, and I said it out loud and my friends were kind of like freaked out. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, this makes sense to me. You know, I didn't even come out to my parents. I came out to the community and then someone told my parents. One night I just had an encounter. I was living with a couple and we were all just smoking a ton. And I just was like, I'm just going to take this chance. And I just found myself crying out to the Lord. Like, I know I'm not supposed to talk to you right now because I'm high and you're probably going to kill me with a lightning bolt. But like, I don't know how to get myself out of this. And the presence of the Lord came in and it was like, I was drowning and I got thrown a lifeline. All this stuff kind of surfaced a year after we got married. I went off to stay with a friend in my hometown. She left for the day for work and I found some pornography and I was so mad and I was so angry. So I just remember, you know, like afterwards, the Lord visiting me. It was in that moment that he showed me like, if you continue down this road and if you pick this back up, the thing that I delivered you from, you will not only bring this into your marriage, but you're gonna bring this into your children's lives.
Welcome, truth seekers, light bearers, and the lost, to the Light in the Darkness podcast.
We hope this show can shed some light on whatever leg of the journey you're on. We are your hosts. I'm Corey.
And I'm Daniel. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we have a familiar guest. You know her from episode 10, Liz. This is part 2, and here's Corey to tell you a little bit more about today's episode.
We're really excited for part 2, if you will, with our guest, Liz Flaherty. When we recorded episode 10, Sandwiches and Little Gray Men, that night, we also got a second recording with her. We have held onto it until we felt that it was an opportune time to release it. In this episode, she is just going to break down her testimony of her journey to sexual identity and wholeness and purity. So it's going to be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Without any further ado, let's get to it. I don't know how long it's been for our listeners, but for us, it's literally been like 30 minutes since we wrapped up your first episode.
But it feels like a lifetime.
Welcome back. So excited to have you back. During your first episode, you alluded several times to the fact that you, your testimony, but we didn't unpack that fully. You mentioned a lot of details, but we really focus on your supernatural and paranormal encounters in your first episode. So we just wanted to make sure that we took the time to record again and hear about the amazing things that God did in your life in your testimony, because you talk about sexual identity and all these and homosexuality and all these things that are part of your testimony. So we just really wanted to press record again and hear about all that.
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me back. And as I'll have to say, the caffeine has worn down a little bit. And so maybe I'll talk a little slower this time. But no, I had a lot of fun in the first set of talking with you guys. And it, you know, it's really great to just remember, like, encounters and remember what the Lord's done. And so I enjoy times where I get to brag on Jesus. And thanks for having me back. Thanks for hitting record again.
It is our pleasure, I assure you.
Adventure part two.
Yeah. So for those of you that didn't listen to the first episode, my name is Liz Flaherty, and I'm 44 at the time of this recording. And I grew up, I was born on a rainy fall day, November 2nd, 1978, in the Bay Area. And my parents were, worked for Hewlett Packard. I went to a really nice Christian school. We were living it up in the Bay. And when I was 7, my parents felt a call to ministry and became pastors of a really tiny church about 4 hours north of where we were at, up in the woods, up in the redwoods of Northern California. Like I said in the previous podcast, I think it's sixth generation believer. That's how far back kind of my parents could remember, especially my dad's side. Lots of pastors and evangelists and just, you know, really a rich history in sharing the love of the Lord. And, you know, my parents, once we moved to this small little town, you know, we were very much a contrast. It's very steeped in the New Age. A lot of people moved from the Bay Area up into the woods north in that area in the 60s and 70s and kind of staked their little homesteads and grew weed and just wanted to raise their families up in the woods. And so, you know, I grew up in a pretty relaxed liberal culture, very much into the arts, very much into pursuing spiritual things, but not a lot of believers on the other hand. So I credit like my artistic abilities to being growing up in that culture because I really value that about that culture. At the same time, just a very different worldview than that of a biblical one. Yeah, so like I said, sixth generation, my grandma and my mom both have pretty radical healing stories of their childhood. My grandmother, when she was six or seven, she fell out of a barn window and landed on a pitchfork, and it tore the entire side of her body, like the skin off. And my great-grandmother was very much a prayer. And, you know, they ministered in the coal mines of Virginia. They would, you know, one of those stories where they would travel miles and miles to just preach the gospel. And so she very much understood prayer and praying for what they needed the Lord to provide. And so, you know, she prayed over my grandmother and, you know, she had to change the dressing and it every time she'd have to do it, just sunk her heart. Like she just couldn't bear. And so, a few days into it, you know, she went to change the dressing and the Lord had completely healed my grandmother's side. Like there was no scars, no anything. It was completely healed. And so, yeah, I grew up with like these stories of the Lord's provision and the Lord's healing. And in my mom's life, you know, she grew up in a really abusive home. She weighed 2 pounds when she was born. Even though they say she was full term, that's just how malnutrition, you know, she was. She lived in Arkansas, the last of 10 kids, the runt. And she was always sick. And she tells that when she was 2, she wasn't walking or talking. And a man who came to service their, I believe it was like their gas company, came to service their heater and saw how bad she was medically. And so he told them, if you don't take her to the hospital, like, I'm going to report you. And this is back in the 50s. So it had to have been pretty bad for someone in the 50s to say, I'm going to call the authorities. Like, this child is in need. So they took her to the hospital and she got a few blood transfusions and started walking and talking after that. And then it was later in her life that in her 20s that she was passing out all the time. They didn't know what was wrong with her. And so finally, after passing out at work one day, she went to the hospital and they discovered that one of her kidneys was completely filled with poison and dead and was going to rupture at any moment and kill her. And so they took it out, saved her life then. And then when I was born, they found a huge tumor on the other kidney. And, you know, she prayed. She's like, Lord, I want to raise this baby. You've brought me this far. And she was actually in the hospital and she heard someone come in the room and touch her. and she didn't look, you know, she just was kind of half awake. Well, in the morning when they ran more tests, it was completely gone. So, you know, just that heritage of the Lord touching my family's lives. You know, that I grew up with that. But like I also shared is, you know, we grew up in a very poor community that was a contrast. And so our church was an Assembly of God church and a very small church. And we didn't really operate in the gifts, I would say. And like I joked before, again, you guys, if you haven't listened to the last podcast, like, you know, the prophetic consisted of one person standing up, giving a prophetic word who was usually upset with what my father was doing and just gave a very direct prophetic word on the new direction of the church. So that was like kind of our only, you know, and I, you know, they prayed in tongues and it just was a lot of growing up. We were the underdogs and it was, we were just trying to get by. We were just trying to keep our head above water. Often it was financially, we were just very poor. My parents would give out of their cupboards even when they were pretty bare, but then we would see the Lord, you know, like I said before, my parents would win the grocery, drawing at the local grocery store right in the nick of time, or someone would show up with groceries on our doorsteps. And it's pretty cool because those type of stories were stories we heard of my dad's grandparents who were ministers out in the hills of Virginia in the snow, you know, when they didn't have any food and some food would show up. And so it just was, I felt growing up, you had that sense of that heritage being continued of like testing the faith of like, how is the Lord going to provide for us? But with that, you know, I really dealt a lot with anxiety growing up. I was a heavyset little girl. Growing up, I really wanted to please my parents. I wanted to please others. I wasn't looking to necessarily rebel against God, but I would say that through pain and through seeing the pain of my parents and them not having freedom and oppression from, you know, both of them had been sexually abused growing up. You know, sex was something that was not talked about in our home in like a positive light, you know, and at the time, like, I really don't know what they would have done differently. Because we were so isolated, like we were just so out in the middle of nowhere. Like I think they'd have to drive like 3 or 4 hours to get to counseling. You know, we didn't have like the internet. So I think, you know, they really did the best with what they had. But in that, like I, you know, as I matured and grew, like I became very fascinated with like sexuality and like what is this all about? You know, I wanted to find out more of like how I was made and like why. You know, I hit puberty. I remember going to the Christian bookstore with my mom and I saw this book that said Almost 12, How to Talk to Your Kids About Sex. And I picked it up and I was like, you need to buy this for me because you're not talking to me about sex at all. So she bought it. She was like, okay. And, but yeah, for her, like, you know, she'd been abused by a pastor and by her father. And so it's understandable. Like she was just trying to live life the best she could. But with that, it was just like a ton of shame. And like sex was just like, we don't talk about that. So I just started to get curious and I just started to experiment. And I think I was 11 the first time I encountered pornography. And, you know, it was such a strong hook. I would think too, because I just was really rejected by a lot of the guys, you know, my school was like 100 people. Yeah. Like we were such a small little community. Plus I was like the little fat Christian girl, like who's going to want to go out with her. But, so, you know, there's just a lot of rejection, but also a lot of curiosity. And it just got me into a lot of things that, you know, little girls don't need to be, or little people don't need to be exposed to. So then that just really, you know, I hit a lot of stuff from my parents. And as I grew up at school and with my peers, I think it just kind of wore at me not having any kind of Christian community that I could do daily life with. And so I just kind of grew tired of like being alone and wanting to have community and wanting to be a part. And so when I was in high school, and I had a lot of, I would say agoraphobia. Like I would have a lot of times I would be so anxious when I'd leave the house, I'd throw up in the teachers would send me home. Like, I did see a school counselor, but, like, no one could really figure out what was wrong with me. And I think I was just a really sensitive kid that was having to navigate a lot of things without a lot of resource. And through that, like, yeah, I'd watch my friends and they'd have boyfriends and they'd go to dances and they would, you know, and so I was always like the awkward girl in the, you know, like at the quarter. And I, you know, I had a couple instances where I had encounters with guys, but it was always kind of like not very overt and not very like public. I had one boyfriend, I gotta say, in high school, but that didn't really last very long. So by the time I hit late high school, I'm, you know, my parents are actually, they're really hungry for the Lord. They actually went to Brownsville and they're really seeking God's best. They really wanted transformation. And so, you know, looking back, there was really kind of a warfare started over me really strongly during that time. And so, like, I fully just started to like smoke weed and just went, I don't care anymore. I'm tired of fighting, trying to be the good girl. I didn't have any, like, really, I didn't have an understanding of access with really intimacy with the Lord, like really how I could go to him as my, like, as my friend and as my father and as a someone who was glad to see me, someone who actually wanted to talk to me, who wanted to commune with me. Like, that was off my grid. You know, God was kind of like, my picture was, you know, he took care of us. He's who my parents worked for, if I was honest. And, you know, he was good, but it didn't really equate into like my daily life. I didn't know where to take, like, I didn't know I could take my pain to him. I didn't know he was the restorer of my soul, the lover of my soul. So if, you know, fast forward to, I'm starting to smoke weed, starting to experiment, starting to have like kind of sexual encounters with people. And I lose my virginity at 17 with a guy who's like 28. I mean, it was horrible. Like, and it just started to set this like resentment and this callousness in me where, and also, like, you know, something I don't share in my book, which I probably will share in my next one, is I had an encounter with a family member, an older male, and, you know, it was just like an abusive situation sexually when I was really young. And I never told my parents about it. And so that, again, like, just sort of started to callous my heart towards men and towards feeling safe towards men. And, you know, I love my dad. He was a safe person, but just like, I just didn't have a lot of positive encounters with guys and definitely not very many romantic, like anyone really liked me. So pretty desperate little kid. So, yeah. So I gave away my virginity. I didn't understand why I would keep it. Really didn't have a grid for that either. And, by the time I hit my senior year, I was just so broken. I just was so, you know, just so questioning everything. And, you know, it was one night I was drunk with some friends and we were at our teacher's house, who was someone I really respected, still respect to this day. And her partner, they owned a home. There were some coaches in our community, amazing women, like just pillars in our community, and just gave and gave and gave of their lives to take care of kids. Like, I have just such respect for them. And, you know, it's kind of like in this moment where I'm like, you know what? I don't really feel, even when I'm with a guy sexually, like, I don't feel connected. I don't feel as satisfied emotionally as I am with when I'm with all my girlfriends, when I'm hanging out. Like, I don't feel as accepted and loved and safe and celebrated, you know? And so I think, like, it was like in that moment that, like, I took on that kind of narrative of like, well, that makes sense in that I'm a lesbian then. Like, that makes sense to me. Like, logically, that makes sense. Like, if I didn't have these feelings, then, you know, it just made sense to me. And so I just kind of I was like, you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm a lesbian. Like, and I said it out loud and my friends were kind of like freaked out. They're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, this makes sense to me. This kind of like fills in the gaps here of why, you know, cause at the time I'm like, I'm not putting together like the story that's been unfolding. I'm just kind of living like you do in the moment when you're 17. And so I came out and my parents were like, you know, I didn't even come out to my parents. I came out to the community. And then someone told my parents. And so I remember my dad saying, like, hey, like, can we get you help and counseling? And, you know, at the moment, I'm like, I'd watched them struggle so much with their, even just their marriage and their intimacy. So I didn't have the faith that I'm like, you can't help me. You can't help yourselves with it. Like, there's nothing that I really see that I want to mimic in my life. And that sounds harsh, but that's where I was at. So I like full on just went full feet, like, you know, took a bisexual witch to prom and like fully came out, like just put gay stickers on my car and like, you know, headed into college. And my parents, you know, I was just like such a to my parents. Oh, we can bleep that out. You know, just so horrible to my parents.
That was our first swear ever.
I actually should have picked a better. No, sorry. you know, just a butt, just horrible, as you do when you're just, you know, you think you know the route out of your pain and that everyone else is stupid who's a little bit older than you. And put my parents through a lot of hell. And so I move out, I head up to college, it's like 2 hours away drive. And during my first semester, I get a phone call from my dad. And at the time I was high, like I remember. And he's like, your mom has breast cancer. And yeah, I just remember not feeling anything because I was just numb. And 3 months later, she passed away. And I was obviously just, I don't remember much for the next year or two, like just not really navigating life really well, like just smoking a lot and just medicating a lot and looking at a ton of porn and getting into all sorts of just crap. And, you know, God in that time was working in my heart. And I would drive home to see my dad, and my brother's 9 years younger, so he was 10. And so my dad's still trying to like pastor a church of like, I don't know, 30 people. And I'd show up and I would stick around for a little bit of time and then I would jet because I just couldn't even handle to be around anybody. But all that time, like, they were praying for me and believing that God was going to reach me. And I was pretty, like, pretty gone. And, you know, and my dad would later tell me that he had this encounter where he woke up and he could feel something crawling up his bed and onto him. And he was like kind of paralyzed, kind of like the stories I was telling you guys in the last podcast that I had. My dad had a lot of encounters growing up too, like seeing a lot of things. And so he talked about like how, like pretty much this demon showed up and kind of stood on him and said, if you stop praying, we'll leave her alone. And like in the moment, my dad said, like, it, you know, this is like years later. He's like, I was really intimidated. Like at the time, like you think logically now when you're looking at it as someone observer, you're like, oh, of course, good job. Like you're praying. It means it works. But at the time, he's like, I was afraid. Like, he's like, obviously I rebuked it and it left. But he's like, it wasn't until later that I used it as encouragement. But at the time, like he was like, I was really freaked out. So there was like, you know, just this war going on for my soul. And I remember, you know, I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't, you know, I just would get deeper and deeper. And I'd never bring God into my relationships. Like, and I didn't really have a lot of relationships, to be honest. I wasn't a good looking lesbian. Like I wasn't a very popular lesbian. You know, I was still a very awkward, shy, you know, but at the same time, like would have loved to have a monogamous, like one, you know, I was not like a player, you know, I just wanted companionship. I just wanted to be loved and to find refuge from pain, but I would never bring, I remember I had one girlfriend who was Catholic and she's like, what? And she had Jesus on her wall. And she's like, why don't you ever talk about, you know, you bring your faith. And I'm like, I'm not bringing Jesus into this. Like this is, I knew enough. Like, I'm like, I know what, this isn't the path to anything good. So fast forward to one night, I just had an encounter, and I would say it's probably like a couple years after my mom had died, and I was living with a couple and we were all just smoking a ton and living the college life, and they were gone. And I just was like, I'm just going to take this chance. And I just found myself crying out to the Lord. Like, I know I'm not supposed to talk to you right now because I'm high and you're probably going to kill me with a lightning bolt, but like, I don't know how to get myself out of this. And the presence of the Lord came in. You know, I shared this in the other podcast, but it's worth repeating. And it was like I was drowning and I got thrown a lifeline. And it was like I could breathe for the first time in years. And life started to come back into my lungs. And his presence entered back into my heart. And, you know, he was always there and he was always coming after me. And I could feel, you know, I could feel that pull and that that presence, but it would never stay. You know, I actually remember times shaking when I was like, you know, just doing the things I was doing and it being so demonically oppressed and literally shaking. And I would briefly cry out and the Lord would show up for a second and then he'd be gone. It was like he was showing me, hey, I'm here with you to draw you out, but I can't stay with you with where you're at because this is so counter to my presence. This is not me. And so that, you know, he's teaching me through those months and those years, like he's leading me out. So it was from that point on, like I really yielded to the Lord and started to get delivered from just, you know, smoking. I got sick every time I smoked after that. I went to look at porn and things and it was like his presence would come and fill up the room and just like ruin it all. And like, you know, in the best way. And just a calming and a soothing came to my heart to a lot of those broken places. Now, I would struggle with pornography after that and with, you know, having to walk through a lot of other things. But like, I remember so specifically during that time, a grace that the Lord's like, I'm here to take you by the hand and I'm here to walk you out and to deliver you. And I just want to say for like those listeners, you know, I'm 44. And so this is like during the 90s and the 2000s and like, I would say even more now, I encounter women who they hear my testimony, you know, I'll speak at a conference or something. And like, they'll be, I mean, I can't tell you how many times the person who you would never think would come up and talk to me, like comes up and talks to me and tells me, you know, it's like, I mean, I've been at places where, you know, a 60-year-old woman walks up and she's like, I've never told anything but anyone this, but I had an affair with a woman 20 years ago and have kept it a secret, or it's the girl on the worship team who no one knows like what's going on because, you know, it's so hard for women to get help with sexual addiction and with pornography use. And it's almost like a rites of passage for men in our culture. And I would say like, it is changing in our secular culture with women and sexuality. It's kind of becoming more of a badge of like being liberated to like explore your sexuality. But I'd say in the church, like it's just not even on a grid for people. So I just would encourage leaders, especially women with girls that they're mentoring, please ask the hard questions. Please ask women like, hey, talk to me. Have you been exposed to pornography? Like, what do you guys think about, you know, some of the stuff we're seeing on television? If anyone needs help, I'm here for you. And you don't necessarily have to have walked out of that, like, but you can share like how the Lord has walked you out of other things. So the, you know, the path to deliverance is, you know, it's Jesus. So you don't have to have the specifics line up. It helps, but I think as more people who disciple, you know, really share and become vulnerable with how the Lord's, you know, really rescued them and restored them, it encourages other believers too. So fast forward. I start to experience the Lord, in really new ways. I would say that prophetically, like things start to happen that it kind of like, frames in a new way a lot of the torment I had growing up with kind of spiritual sensitivities. And I start to learn about my authority in Christ and why I kind of am wired in certain ways and, gives me a place to be purposeful and to see my place in the kingdom, instead of just like a victim, like I am actually walking with more of a purpose now. So one example would be, you know, growing up, I was such a discerner of spirits, like such a feeler. And one way that manifests in my life is I'd walk into a place and I'd be fine. I'd be like, just everything, you know, good day going on. And all of a sudden I get hit with the most despair, depression. And if you're not careful, like you would think that's, you know, you're a psycho, you know, like you're imbalanced. But I learned like, okay, someone in here is dealing with that. I'm going to pray. And as I would learn that, like it would totally lift and it would totally shift. And so that's just like one example of how the Lord started to take me through this process of understanding like how I was wired, how he made me. And then with that too, I went to school of ministry. I would say that in the years of school of ministry, I sort of like took on this dormant place with my sexuality. Like I just knew it just kind of got, I just kind of pushed it aside and focused on like the prophetic or like evangelism or like healing or other things that were so prominent in this, you know, the school I was going, school of ministry. And because I didn't really know what to do with it. I also just didn't know what the Lord wanted to do in my heart. I knew I wanted to get married. I was still attracted to women. But I was starting to become more and more trusting of men and attracted to men. So I just kind of like became like a nun. I just kind of like tried to turn it off and just focus on the Lord and just, you know, God willing, I'll get married someday and it'll work out. But I was still, you know, I was still stumbled in pornography and I would definitely have seasons where it would not be going on, but I didn't even know what to do with that. And there really wasn't anyone talking about like, hey, if you need help, like come to us. And that's not a fault of the school, but it just wasn't their focus. It wasn't a discipleship school. So I was in school of ministry. You know, I'm getting all of this kind of revelation on signs and wonders and how the Lord can really show up with power and might and the gifts of the Spirit and all things that I had not really been exposed to growing up, even though I've come from this like legacy in the church. And it was really an awakening to, you know, how the Lord can invade and restore and show up in people's lives. And then I kind of came to this impasse where I had, you know, my, I'm kind of like talking through my book, but oh, well, when I was in starting second year school of ministry, my dad had been progressively getting sick. Over like a 6 month period, and they couldn't find what was wrong with him. You know, my brother was like 13 at the time. So, you know, I would go home from school of ministry. It was like about a 4 hour drive. I'd, you know, make sure they're doing well. My dad's still pastoring the church. You know, they're like ordering Chinese every night and watching sci-fi movies. And then my dad would preach on Sunday. But he just progressively was getting sicker and, you know, he was a heavy set man. And the hospitals aren't that great in the area. It's a rural part of California. And, you know, they're like, oh, it's your diabetes, you're overweight. And they would just send him home. And he would like, there's something not right with me, you know? And he had a limp that was getting progressively worse. He wasn't feeling well. And so, during second year, I, got a phone call that my dad had gone into a coma and they had flown him to Santa Rosa Hospital, which was like I had taken by helicopter. So, I drove there and, but right before I left, they're like, my grandparents called and said, hey, I don't know how to tell you this, but your dad passed away. And I immediately think, well, I've been learning about all this stuff in school. Let's get a bunch of people together. Let's go raise him from the dead. Like it was that like, no grief, no, not just like, okay, this is what we're doing. So took, you know, some school ministry friends, some other people in the church and went, and, you know, by the time I got there, it was like 2 a.m, you know, prayed for him for a number of hours, you know, and it's interesting. Like I could see my dad's like spirit in the room and like, I was like, get back in your body. Like I was like commanding, like I was like, we need you, like get back. And there was like, I could feel this resistance. And like, I'm not one to preach, like talk to dead people or anything like that. But like in that moment, like I knew my dad was in the room, like I just knew. And it was so tangible. And I was just like, we like, come back. We need you. Like we, you know, we love you. We need you. And was just commanding his spirit back in his body. And so, you know, we pray through the night. I leave the room. I go to walk out into the parking lot to plug my phone in because my phone had died. And I plugged it in right then. My pastor called me. And he was like, you know, let me ask you a question. Like, does your dad want to come back? And I just like instantly knew right then my dad was gone. And oh, like it was such a hard moment of, you know, like, God, you brought me to this place of like watching such magnificent power of your spirit. And here I am, you know, I'd lost my mom 3 years before. At that moment, I became guardian of my brother, who is 13. I'm 22 at the time. And, you know, it was just this place of, you know, it was just this shock, but also like, I couldn't believe it. It was such not the outcome that I had expected. And at that moment, my two of my friends walked out of the hospital right then. I mean, they'd been praying all the night too. And they said, the Lord just released us from praying. Like they told us to stop. He's told us to stop. And so, you know, the will is so powerful. You know, our will is so powerful. And to say that my dad and my mom died premature, like I would say that, like I would say that their lives were cut short. My mom was 48, I think it was. My dad was 46. I'm 44. It's kind of crazy to think in a few years they'll be their age. I would say that hopelessness and despair really set into my dad, especially after my mom died. But I also believe like the Lord just let him come home. I think I've used that, like, obviously, like, it sent me into places later on, which I'll describe in a second, that, you know, I kind of went back into my old ways of trying to find relief from pain. But now that I'm older, I pray, I'm like, Lord, I want to live long, and I want to be one that destroys the works of the enemy in hopelessness and in doubt. Like, I want to be the person to come in and break that off of people because they see how destructive that is, especially unbelief. And, you know, my dad, you know, he loved the Lord. He was such an amazing teacher of the word, but there was something in him that, you know, had really grown really critical of that the Lord would do anything for him. And I think that stemmed a lot from his abuse from his dad, honestly, growing up. And so watching how that not being healed projected onto the Lord, and then therefore he lost kind of his will to live. That's really sobering and really powerful. And so, you know, it was later that, you know, and I write about it a couple of years later, I was just so depressed and so grieving. I ended up like going out to a bar, getting drunk and like sleeping with a guy, like, and it caused me to run towards help instead of away, because I saw like just how quickly I could turn back to those things. You know, I'm prophesying over people, I'm praying for the sick, watching them get healed, and just how quickly it could shift when I just, you know, like, it was really humbling. But in that, I found a ministry my friend directed me to that dealt with sexual wholeness. And so over the next course of a few years, I unpacked a lot of things where it taught me how to deal with those broken areas. And really, it was like, hey, if you just boiled it all down, it was that the Lord wants to be with me in those places. He wants to be invited into those places. And he really wants to give me grace to overcome, and he wants to restore. And so, you know, I learned, like, you know, I was really addicted to like pornography and masturbation for so long in my life. I never thought I would be free. And it was in that process that I remember some of my leaders saying, like, you know, you just need to invite the Holy Spirit before, during, or after. And I was like, you're crazy. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm locking Jesus out of the room. Like, he's not invited in here. Like, this, that's what? You're a heretic. Like, but it was finally in that place of like, okay, God sees all, and if he's dwelling within me, like, he's here anyways. So it was allowing him into those places, and then just discovering, like, you know, the things that would trigger me and the things that were had a hold of me. And, you know, and then I'm going through this really quickly, but, you know, I eventually, like, I meet Andy when I'm 26, and we get married a year later. And I won't go too deep into this, but about a year into this, so this is when I finally, I got free from porn. For I would say for good. Now, can I stumble back in? Absolutely. I'm totally, I'm totally capable of that. But it's been since this moment, how many years ago, that I really got free. And it was about a year into our marriage, and Andy had been hiding a ton of stuff, and we almost got a divorce, and it was really scary. And like, that's for another episode. And I mean, he talks about it freely because the Lord just did an amazing work in his life. But at that point, all this stuff kind of surfaced a year after we got married. And I went off to stay with a friend in my hometown, not a believer. And I found, she left for the day for work, and I found some pornography, and I was like, I was so mad and I was so angry. And at this point I was just like, nothing in my life ever works out. Like, just so kind of getting bitter towards the Lord. And, and it's amazing what trauma can do. It can cause you to be so short-sighted and so kind of self-centered if you're not careful. And that's why thankfulness is so important, and to remember what the Lord's done and to rehearse that. Because when you go through these trials, that's what needs to be before your face. And it's really vital to survive if you're going to walk this walk. But so I just remember, like afterwards, the Lord visiting me in her house and just being like, I'm here. I'm responding to you. I cried out to the Lord. But it was in that moment that he showed me, like, if you continue down this road, and if you pick this back up, the thing that I delivered you from, you will not only bring this into your marriage, but you're going to bring this into your children's lives. And I mean, we were no near having kids at that point, but I could see, it was like he gave me a picture of the future. And I saw Andy and I bound. I saw our children bound. I saw this thing winning. And this thing destroying the works of what the Lord had done. And I saw myself not bringing the Lord at the end of my life a really, that treasure of my life and that worship that I could lay at his feet. Like I saw it tainted, and I saw, almost like, that scripture where they cast their crowns at the Lord's feet. Like, I believe that our testimonies are those crowns, those places that we allow, that we worship him with our lives. Like, that's what we toss at his feet, what we submit our lives to. And I just saw that broken. And I just saw, like, I don't know how to describe it better than that, but that the Lord was worthy of me laying it down, and that I loved my husband and my children more that I would lay it down. And it was just like that love and embrace of Christ. And also that empowerment that, like, hey, this can end today. And it was like, it was just a submitting to the Lord. And it sobered me, guys. I don't know how to describe it. But in that moment, I don't want this to be my story. I don't want this this brief, like, orgasm to destroy my inheritance that I've worked so hard to overcome with the Lord's help. Like, how dare the enemy bring this back into it? I just got angry and just got bold with it. And so from that day, I'd say I don't have this draw to it anymore. I actually get angry when something pops up. Like, I get really, pissed off when I see television, cause it's like an assault now. It's so overt. And Andy's testimonies, he has his own testimony he could share sometime, but I really, in that day, got free. And, I was like, 28 by that time. So, it was an instant process, I would like to say, regarding that. But, from that point, the Lord did such an amazing, restoration in our marriage. And, it took years of working really hard to continue to pursue the Lord. And, I just think we're all born into a broken world, and we all have this journey that we're trying to bring the kingdom to our lives and to our families' lives. And, if I can encourage anyone, like, man, if you knew me 20 years ago, I'm so not the same person. And if the Lord would do it for me, if the Lord would speak to me, use me, to minister to others, if he would, deliver me and walk with me daily, like, he's going to do that for you. I'm not anybody special at all. And so, I, But without that intimacy with the Lord, like, I just can't do anything. You know, I can't overcome in my own strength. Like, I have to have the Lord help me in so many things. You know, sometimes it kind of like ticks Andy off that I'm like, just dependent, you know, like he's like, well, just can't you make it? I'm like, actually, I just really need to pray about this. Like, or, just, I, you know, I try really hard not to lean on my own understanding about certain things, about how solutions are supposed to happen. Like, you know, it's just really important. I value that going to the Lord, because that's what's like saved my life. You know, that's what's kept me from suicide. That's what's kept me from leaving my family, from just running away during these times. It's what's, you know, I once had a pastor say, like, you know, it's a miracle that you trust anybody, Liz. And I would say it's because of Jesus. Like, it's because he's walked with me through all this. So yeah, so that's kind of, I don't know what else to share.
Wow.
That's kind of where I'm landing, but
epic.
That's amazing, because in your testimony, I'm hearing both the journey of small daily decisions, and I'm hearing the miracle of it being broken off in a moment. But it took the daily decisions for the breaking off. You know, so often people pray, just take this away from me, break this off of me. And sometimes the Lord just steps in the first time and does that, and it's gone. And it's just that draw is gone. And sometimes it takes years of daily decisions until it either just goes away or it comes back and the Lord breaks it off. It's not about the process he uses. It's about the fact that he does it. And it's about hope. Your story brings hope. And I find that so beautiful. And I also love the fact that he used legacy and your children as the catalyst. I know you probably weren't preparing on sharing any of that journey. Are you comfortable at all? And we can edit this out if you aren't. Are you comfortable at all sharing your story to Hudson?
Yeah. Like, I think when Hudson gets old enough, Andy and I really want to be open with what God's done in our life, because I think hiding, like one time I was on a flight and I sat next to this lady and we were started talking and she's like, what do you do for a living? And I was like, well, I'm in ministry and I share about sexual identity. And she's like, oh, wow. Like, oh, well, we, you know, I have a bunch of kids and we don't talk about sex. And I said, well, how has that worked for your family? She's like, well, my daughter's pregnant. So I'm like, we were made to be sexual beings, right? Like, that's not the issue. And so, you know, our prayer and like what we hope to practice is to be in some of the most healthy homes I've been in, where their kids grow up and they have good, healthy sex lives with their spouses. And they, you know, they live openly, in communicating with their families. Like, that openness is, you know, with wisdom is what I think is the remedy. And when you understand, like my dad could never fully describe to me, like, why it was important to wait till marriage. Like, and now, like, in that, just understanding, like, wow, I understand the narrative of like how the Lord began creation. I know how it plays out in, you know, how our bodies are made to be with one person. Yeah. So now I understand the components of why it's sacred. And being able to share how that's exciting and how that's life-giving, you know, instead of it being this like secret, shameful thing, you know, I think that's what draws kids towards health. It's like, let's celebrate it. Let's talk about how awesome, you know, we were made and what sex is meant to be, you know, what a healthy sex life is, like when you're married, how to prepare for it, like how to manage singleness and how to, you know, all these components where I think we can start the dialogue. It doesn't necessarily have to be like totally about the act of sex, but we seed these areas that we can start the conversation of like, what does a healthy soul look like and how you really navigate that and steward that growing up. So definitely, like, our testimonies will be a part of, you know, Hudson's upbringing, hopefully other children that we have, you know, as we, you know, share. I mean, is it a little terrifying? Yes. Like, you know, there's definitely like, oh man, we prayerfully walk into it. But I think the fact that we're asking the Lord for wisdom, we're talking to other parents who we observe, like, does it really well, you know, whose kids are really healthy in that way. I'm hopeful, you know, I'm looking forward to those milestones with Hudson.
Amen.
Double amen.
Yeah. Because this isn't something that is discussed very well in Christendom, and the Bible is not silent on it. But going back to our puritanical roots, people just don't get past the discomfort to talk about it. And that's hard to talk about, like with your parents, when you're wounded in that area and you don't have a healthy outlook at all. How are you supposed to pass that down to your children? Yeah. I know that my own testimony is one of years and years of addiction to pornography and masturbation. And it really came down to, for me, someone had a conversation with my then girlfriend, now wife. Thank God that's not what my wife was going to talk to them about. My wife was going to talk to them about something completely different. And they just felt prompted by the Holy Spirit to just ask, like, is he struggling with porn? And she was like, yeah. And they're like, well, you need to get that dealt with. Like, you know, you need to get that dealt with. That can't be a part of your marriage. That can't be a part of your life. If you're serious about this guy, you have to give him an ultimatum. Like, it's you or that. And like, no second chances. And that's literally the conversation she had with me. Like, this is like a one time and we're done. Like, you're done with this from today on. And then from that conversation, the grace just really stepped in for me to leave that behind and walk past it.
Yeah.
Because for me, I knew I always had a sense that when I was ready to give it up and when I had something more valuable to me than it, I would give it up. And that's what the Lord did in that moment. He knew that Megan was more valuable to me than this. And, you know, that temptation, we don't talk about it enough. That temptation doesn't go away when you get married, you know, with social media and all these different avenues, our over-sexualized culture, you know, it's being thrown in your face every day. You turn on the TV, it's there. You pull up your phone, it's there. All these hooks are constantly being thrown out there, and you can't give room to them, and you have to, there have been plenty of times I've deleted Facebook off my phone. I've done all the things just when I noticed that there was residual, like, oh, this keeps coming up. And also times where it's like, oh wow, every two or three posts in my Instagram feed, all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, it's not like I'm clicking on these. It's not like I'm searching for any of these.
Yep. Nope. They'll pop up.
The algorithm or whatever's pulling the strings of the algorithm. Let's be honest. We're a spiritual podcast. We're a supernatural podcast. And there are forces that are making these things happen. All of a sudden, this algorithm decides to give me a bunch of bouncing booties. And I don't need that. So We have to delete that app for a while until it gets it straight and like moves on. And then it's amazing. Like a few days later, it's clean and it's gone. It's there's all kinds of snares, and I feel like I'm probably rambling, but yeah.
No, I think you're making a solid point. I'm going to bring a different perspective. So I came from a household where, kind of like you, Liz, we didn't talk about sex. And about the time I hit that age, I learned everything from a kid on the bus whose parents actually gave him a talk. I watched Discovery Channel. And so I connected the dots. My dad's talk with me was an extension cord under the house. He said, son, this is the male end of the cord. This is the female end of the cord. And he put them together and said, you get it, right? What I didn't know at the time is he was struggling with porn at that exact moment. It was a generational thing. I had no idea I was walking into it. And so not too long after that, it got exposed to me. I remember one day I was, you know, mom and dad had split. I was down in my room, went down the hall to use the bathroom, and I'm like, whoa, dad's watching that on his TV. It's literally what I'm watching on my TV down the hall. And it was, for me, it was not an ultimatum with Abby that did it. It was years, honestly, of a struggle of an addiction. I remember her, honestly, walking through it with me with grace, not so much to the point of, I want that person, I want that. It was actually somewhat of a shame driven thing I would say that was the core of it. And it was her just honestly walking through that with me. And a matter of complete honesty, transparency, communication, and those moments of, hey, I am having a moment of weakness right now. And I had a few moments where I invited Jesus into that room with me. When you said that earlier, I was like, oh my gosh, been there, been like, ooh, Holy Spirit, meet me here right now, kind of thing. And that will do the trick. Just saying, that will kill anything going on in there in that moment.
Definitely. And there's, you know, and my husband and I both have ministered to couples and individuals. And, you know, I think too, it's a little difficult because like we have like kind of this, we've brought in sort of an AA mentality into our addiction help. And so we meet some people sometimes who go like, well, I've been told it's going to take 8 years and that's just standard and da, da, da. And so, you know, we've had to kind of unpack with people, like you said, Corey, it's like the grace to stop is today. It's really us who holds ourselves back. And yes, the Lord, and too, like I, you know, there's people who've been abused sexually and there's a lot of coping mechanisms that come out with that the Lord has to unpack with someone. So I don't ever want to like shame, someone who it takes time. Cause like I shared, it took me up until that moment. But there was that, I mean, that's just the path that the Lord, and it sounds like Corey, it's the same with you. Like there's this place of like laying down for love and then like a removal of temptations and stuff. And so it's, but it's not talked about very much. I think it's happening more because of technology. It's like rampant in our communities. And if you're not going to teach your kids about sex, something else will teach them about sex. And we just can't stay quiet on things anymore. You know, kids can't learn on the farm anymore how it's done, like, or the extension cord, as you talked about. You know, I would say that, you know, we could head into this scared, or we could head into it with our kids with full of faith. And, you know, and I have to say, Corey, like, you're, to kind of not put them on the spot, but your family, you know, that you married into has a really remarkable, healthy outlook. You know, I've admired Janie and Dan for how they are so affectionate and open about talking with about sex. And I think that, you know, they're a couple that we have looked to, you know, for the future of like, okay, how are we going to talk to our kids? Like, you know, not that anyone's perfect, but they're a great example. Man, they'd be a great one to have on the show. Of just living out loud, openly affectionate, and not afraid to talk about and have a healthy sex life. But at the same, and she's, I hope Jeannie doesn't kill me for bringing this up as an example.
Oh,
but,
dial it up, make her squirm.
But you know, I think.
Lean into the mic, please. Just kidding.
You know, I'm inspired by healthy people, you know, and I don't know, like, when I want to lose weight, I watch healthy people and I get excited about new healthy recipes. And I think, you know, it's not about the don'ts and the stay aways. It's about what are we going to replace things with that's godly. And, you know, we can't take the Duggars approach of like clothing ourselves from head to toe because that didn't really work out well for them. But, you know, it's about celebrating. God's, you know, God loves a party and sex is fun. And it's, you know, we just have to remove that component now, but we also live in a culture that is it's very far from being modest. And, you know, I've also seen creep in the church, just some really, secular ways of trying to live, trying to be healthy, but being very exposed, if that makes sense. Like, so, you know, we can celebrate, but there still is modesty that needs to have a component of like, we need to protect ourselves in our marriages and consider like that we are humans made, you know, the Lord made us to be attracted to beauty and to each other. And, you know, it's continually laying down our lives to choose our spouse, you know? And so we can make that hard for our peers, or we can, you know, make it difficult. And I think if you kind of go into things like not willing to kind of lay down your rights, in the way you dress or the way you present yourself, then we can do a lot of damage in the church trying to celebrate our sexuality. So I think it kind of goes on the, you know, there's a flip side of that that I've seen too. So, you know, we just kind of have to walk this out fearfully before the Lord, but also with a lot of faith.
Another thought I had in listening to your testimony is that a lot of sexual identity issues are really just that, identity issues. Mm-hmm. And I know the lies of porn because that I have walked through. I have walked through the lies of porn. And we don't really, in today's cancel culture, it's hard to touch homosexuality and make a mm-hmm. strong stance for a biblical worldview on homosexuality yep. without the fear of being canceled and being decried as a homophobe. So I don't want to put any words in your mouth. This is your story. And that's what's beautiful, I think, about someone who has lived and has experience. So I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but what did your time in walking a homosexual lifestyle, what was the ramifications on your identity?
If I were to look at things through a secular point of view, I would say, okay, I was born gay. Like I don't have any memories where I wasn't like drawn to and attracted to women emotionally. And as I developed into puberty, that emotional connection was sexualized. So you can lead that, you can follow that path, right, down that road saying like, oh, you're born gay. For me, I see it as a developmental issue where things were misappropriated and where I didn't understand where these things were coming from and what, and really like, again, a biblical worldview of how I was made. And so for me, as God unpacked things, like, yes, there was repenting. There was just, you know, I knew, okay, I can't fantasize about women. I can't feed this like thing that I'm constantly obsessing over. Like anytime you obsess over anything, that's like an idol that's taking the place of the Lord. So I knew enough to be like, okay, I know that this is wrong. I don't understand why I'm obsessing over women, why I just want to be with women. So these are places I'm going to give the Lord. And so as he like walked me through that and there was a grace to walk away from those patterns of my thought life, I saw that a lot of things were, I was always like grasping for to be a powerful woman. Like those were the kind of women that I was so attracted to and so wanted to be and so wanted to like, one author, Leon Payne, put it where, you know, she talks about cannibalism, where like the Donner Party, when they went back to their journals, like the first people that they consumed were people they admired. And at first I read that, I was like, well, that's really weird. But then it made sense to me of like, you obsess over, people analyze people they want to be like. And so in this, you know, don't take that down a weird road. I say that to point to, when I looked at the patterns of who I was attracted to, it was often the strong woman. And it was because I didn't know that part of my identity in Christ, like who he had made me to be, was a strong, compassionate leader. And that was always struggling to come out as I was growing up. It was, you know, it was stifled in a lot of ways. I fumbled through that. I was labeled a lot of things. And so I would hide away because I would want to be accepted. But at the core of it, like I wanted to lead and I wanted to impact people's lives and I wanted to be fully feminine. But, you know, I traded that out because of a lot of like what the culture was telling me to do, what was considered kind of, you know, the feminist, way of empowerment, which was, you know, just to be independent of men. And I would, you know, my feminist friends now would say that's not how they would define it. But at the time, I just wanted to separate myself from pain. And so most of that was time with women. And that was going to solve these issues. But what it left me with was these missing pieces to the puzzle. And I was never, you know, I was satisfied in some ways because I was getting comfort and I was getting, attention and I could control like where, you know, I could seek after and try to find, these encounters the way I thought, you know, I would, that would satisfy. But it always left me feeling like that those pieces were never filled in. Like I was still left wanting. So, and I was still left in pain. So so I would say that the Lord was so gracious and kind to unpack that with me. And, you know, the less I engaged in like gay pornography and obsessing over, you know, people in my life, like often, like I just learned to really go to the Lord. I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm drawn to this person. Like, can you talk to me? And Lord's like, oh, it's because you're dealing with this. And, you know, I just need you to trust me in this way, or to, you know, I see you in this way. I would say 9 times out of 10, the Lord just had his wisdom there waiting for me. You know, wisdom is a person, you know, and it's the Holy Spirit was just there to kind of exchange that identity. And then there were some times where the Lord's like, okay, you just need to stop thinking about that and shift your focus over here. And there wasn't an explanation. And I think that's because he had walked me and taught me, and he didn't need to, you know, I was moving from elementary to high school to college, you know, like he was educating me in the Spirit. So, but I would say that I learned quickly those moments I was feeling like I was kind of drifting back to that old way of thinking, that the Lord was like, hey, this is how I see that you're making an impact, or this is what you're doing that I'm proud of, or, you know, you are this woman. And it dissipated those things. And I, doing what I do, like I meet a lot of people who, in a lot of different denominations, like I'm not going to sit here and say that God's going to like zap you and you're going to be instantly free from ever being attracted to the same sex if you deal with that. Now, have I met people who had like massive encounters and they were like, I'm good, I'm done. And they were like, you know, living with the same sex partner for years and years. Like, yeah, I've met those people. Like, there's not a lot of those people. And I think too, Corey, it kind of comes to that point where like, could I have been free from pornography on day one? Yep. Like, did I struggle with my will and wrestle? Yep. Like, I think everyone, you know, who I've heard from you guys, like it's kind of this, and there's no, you know, praise God that he in his grace knows the path that we're on and is there with us, you know? And I would just hope that I end my life with much more of a narrative that I am of sacrificial love, of like, wow, Lord, you are worth this. You are worth all these other places in my life too, that I want to give you, you know, my whole self to worship you. But we're all moving glory to glory. So, you know, and I have my prayer, my grace is for those people that struggle still, that have been exposed to like, okay, the Lord can bring healing and deliverance, but still struggle. And then, and celebrate with those who have found complete freedom. Like I don't deal with same sex attraction anymore. It's not like a temptation anymore in my life. I can discern when I feel like someone's struggling with that, or it's kind of present, but I've learned too that often like, okay, well, that's not my thoughts. Those aren't my feelings. I've learned to discern like, okay, when things are my stuff and when sometimes people are just carrying certain things. So, does that answer, like, that's kind of a long way around, but, I would say that sexual sin is really difficult because it is meant to dehumanize us. And the more, and it's meant to separate us out and to cause us not to be in a community and contributing, and it turns us inward, whether it be masturbation or, you know, sex outside of marriage, however you want to spin it. Like, it causes us to kind of hide away, do things on our own, and get out of disharmony with our brothers and sisters in the Lord. And so, you know, part of the journey of like moving back into wholeness is learning how to contribute to your community. And, you know, and that is an area that we encourage people like, to pray for grace to know how to serve in those times that you feel like you don't know if you're going to make it through the day without failing, you know, or falling, I should say, not failing. So it's much more, there's more much, you know, I think we preach a gospel that's much more holistic than just wear rubber bands on your wrists and slap yourselves if you're gonna, you think you're gonna look at porn. So
yeah, I'm just coming to realize that God wants every part of us, and we pick our favorite parts that we don't want to give over. He wants your sexuality. He also wants your ambitions. He wants your look on yourself. He wants all these different things, and people just develop strongholds in the areas that they're least likely to give over to him. And just because I haven't struggled with the same thing that someone else has doesn't mean I can't relate to them. But yeah, you totally answered what I was looking for. Thank you so much for taking the time. We know that it's a sacrifice of time to come and do this, especially, you know, we heard little Hudson in the background, praising the Lord.
He's literally cried the whole time. Like, I feel so bad for him, but you know, it's part of being a mom, and it's part of just, he's fine, and he'll sleep really good tonight. It'll be good for me.
Well, again, just let folks know, you're thinking about and pondering on a third book, but you've written two. So go ahead and just tell folks again where to find your books, as well as, I know you have a wonderful, I smell of your Bigfoot soap, right now. If I took off my shirt, which I won't do, I guarantee you it's still clinging to my body. that lovely Bigfoot soap. So why don't you tell folks where to find all your goodies?
I'm going to use that as a clip for my advertisement, Corey. So I have, my ministry page is lizgflaherty.com. And you can, there's links to my two books, The God of My Parents, which is my testimony, kind of takes you through the first 26 years of my life. And then the second book is Discover Eden. And that is a book that was birthed out of me discipling and mentoring women in areas of sexuality, and just sort of is kind of a practical guide of like, talks about homosexuality, talks about pornography, the things that I struggle with in my life, and sort of walks through like, just, you know, talks about sexuality, like how to get free if you're bound by addiction, and just is kind of like a really frank like talk to women. And, it's the book I wish I had when I was struggling. So those two books, you can get them on Amazon too. Like the link basically takes you to Amazon. You could reach out, Facebook message me. I can mail you a copy. I get more of a cut that way. So, and then, my soap. So I make soap. I do woodworking, stuff like that. And that all of the profits from that go towards our adoption costs. We've adopted our son Hudson, but we're also looking to adopt other children. So you can buy soap or a cutting board, and that is lizsartisanshop.com.
And we will throw all that down in the show notes for our listeners. Thank you so much for your time again, Liz. This has been absolutely fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing testimonies of what God does in people's lives through this podcast. So thank you so much for coming
Absolutely.
On.
It was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for the honesty, the transparency, the boldness, and just all the details of your testimony and your story, and for sharing Andy and Hudson with us at different times throughout.
Yes. My wonderful husband. Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for the opportunity to share.
Well, if you're looking for honesty, vulnerability, the cold hard truth, you just heard it. And you know, sometimes it's not easy to tell, and sometimes it's not easy to hear. But I hope and I pray that you chew on that one. Now, on a lighter note, there's a little thing we like to do here called, I don't know, shout out.
Shout out!
And now, here's Corey with today's shout out. Go ahead, bruh.
Today's shout out is coming to us from Apple Podcasts. The reviewer is Tire Meg, and they left us a beautiful 5 stars with the review title being "My Favorite Podcast" with an exclamation point. That makes me really believe it. Such a good podcast. Another exclamation point. It is fun and entertaining and gives such a good perspective on things we face in life today. I love that it is all brought back to biblical truth. It is my favorite podcast to listen to. And we appreciate you listening to Iron Mag so very much. And we also appreciate you going on Apple Podcasts and leaving us a rating and review. Be like Tire Meg, dear listener. Go and leave us ratings. Go and leave us reviews. Share our episodes on your social media platforms. And if you leave a rating review on Apple Podcasts, you too may be the recipient of an LITD shout out.
Shout out! Now, I know I believe Tire Meg more just because of the exclamation point. How about you?
Oh, exclamation points make everything better.
Remember that, folks. We like exclamation points. If you'd like to get to know your hosts or learn more about the show, please visit us at litdpod.com.
That's litdpod.com.
litdpod.com. And if you would like to partner with us in prayer, something we can pray with you about, or you got something you want to share with us, be it a spiritual encounter or supernatural, we'd love to hear from you at litdpod@gmail.com.
That would be litdpod@gmail.com.
litdpod@gmail.com. And until next time, take care, y'all. Well, well, well. If that testimony doesn't put you on the straight and narrow, I don't know what will. That had everything, ups and downs, personal struggles, struggles with others. Yeah, that was a buffet. Thank you, Liz.
Straight and narrow. I couldn't keep a straight.
You did gum nitty. I almost had it.
We're going to use it, too.
I know.
This is what I do. I do the things with the words.